Hello, good evening. Hello if you're driving. Hello if you're listening at home. Hello if you're serving a custodial sentence and you just want to go home. And hello if you're a cowboy with a transistor radio in one hand and the reins of a barking bronco in the other, in a late night rodeo, yeah.
This is Radio 4, and you're listening to Hearing with Hegley.
The first time I walked on stage, someone called out, "Hey, look, it's Buddy Holly, it's Ruddy Buddy Holly. Hey, Big Spec, say something, Buddy. Hey, where's the crickets, Buddy? Hey!" It's not what you'd expect in a nativity play. I came off that night. I said, "Listen, miss, I'm not going to be able to complete the run if I'm going to get this kind of jip." And she said, "Yeah, it was very thoughtless of the headmistress to shout at you like that." "But what you need to do, John," she said, "is to write a little couplet of your own," because she'd written the whole play in rhyming couplets. "Write a couplet of your own. Come on, armed with that tomorrow night. Say something about your glasses before you get into your speech and you'll be okay, because you'll have mentioned your glasses. Anything anybody else says will be redundant, because it was as though you brought your glasses into being, as though you were a creator yourself." John didn't quite understand what she was on about, but got the idea that I should create in the fashion she said. So I went home and made a little couplet up, came in the next evening for the performance, came on stage. "Hello, everybody, my name's Joseph. What have I got? I've got my glasses on my nosef." Shame I was playing one of the oxen, really. Father Coombs, the old parish priest, shows me the floral feast of his front garden. "Pardon my ignorance, Father, but what are those?" "Mahonia." "These?" "Marsh marigolds." "And those?" "Weeds." "And those there?" "Dicentra spectabilis," he reads from the little lolly stick thing leaning in the mid-March air. "It is spring, and I love it. Growth and greenery and bluery above it, here in winter's hinterland and here among the blooms, Father Coombs, bollock naked." Couple more love poems for you. This first one was written 6 days into a relationship. "You stepped into the cafe and you sat down next to me. I'd just ordered breakfast and you were my cup of tea. You said pass the sugar and you passed the time of day. I said it was lovely, although it was really grey. I said, do you live round here? And you asked me my name and I asked you what yours was and they were not the same." Okay, this next one was written six years into the same relationship. "You used to be my cup of tea, but now you're not so hot. You couldn't see enough of me, but now you see the lot. It used to be a mystery, but now it's only us. Or once you were my cup of tea, but now you're more like pus." Cue for a song, I think. Now, this is our weekly Luton song, and for the Luton songs, we're joined by Nigel, who is our Lutonist for the evening. And so if you could appreciate in 15th, 14th century fashion, I think it was pretty much the same as we do now. By applauding, could you please applaud Nigel? If anybody wants to dance, don't. "I spent my days when I was small in Luton on the Lee. The place that I love best of all was Luton Library. 4 new books a fortnight it would to me lend, and as I turned the pages, they turned into my friends. The only ones I had, according to my dad." Moving on now to poetry in India. I'm in India, feeling more secure and less likely to get chindia. I made friends with a steam train fireman who asked how long I would stay in his country. 2 weeks, I replied. Very short, he probed. I'm a very busy man. I joked. What is it, the work you do? He probed further. Poetry, I announced. Aha, he pounced. Now I understand you. My brother does the same. Yes, very hard work. The feeding, the cleaning, loading all the eggs onto the lorry. Thought I said poultry, is it? This next poem is about my mum and dad, and Sue's going to come on and read the part of my mum on this one. When I was at college, I rang my mum and said that I needed to give the festive season a rest because I was so behind in my work. It was a lie. I just wanted to give the festive season a rest. I heard her call out to my dad.
He's not coming home for Christmas, Bob. It's the only time the family get together.
I'm sorry, mum, but this work is really important.
But you're only ever here for a couple of days.
I'm sorry, mum. I'm sorry. Very, very sorry, mum. Very, very sorry. I'll come home at Easter.
He said he won't be home till Easter.
She said to my dad again.
You've made him cry. He's sitting here on the step and he's crying. I've never made him cry. You come home for Christmas and don't upset your father.
But he used to make me cry all the time when I was a boy.
Did he?
You know he did, mum. You know he did.
All the more reason for you to come home then.
She said, trying a more absurdist ploy. This is a poem, actually, this is another poem about me dad. I thought it would be nice to do this one. It's called This Was My Father. I knew him like I knew the front of his hand. I didn't understand his need to wallop me so much, except that it kept us in touch. Apart from skin and bone, I never knew what he was made of or afraid of. In spite of all our time together, he was one of the strangers he warned me about, but without the sweet. I mean, it is scary as a child having an adult bearing down on you, intent on hitting you. But it's nice to make a bit of money out of it in later life. It was something in the delicacy of the footwork which appealed to me when I first saw them Scottish country dancing in assembly. And although I was a bit of a lad about the school, I knew that I too wanted to do this. So I roped a friend into going along to a lesson in the dinner hour, and when the teacher saw that it was us, she said that she sincerely hoped we had not come along there to be stupid. I insisted that we were there to learn. And begrudgingly, she let us join the class, and after a bit, our feet began to get the idea, and I got such a thrill from the thought of learning this skill's secret that I laughed out loud at the pleasure of it. And immediately, she turned off the record and said, "Now get out, the pair of you. I knew you'd only come along here to be stupid." And this is called Glasgow. As we walk across the bridge, across the Clyde, I talk of the tide. And the spring in the suspension, but do not mention our tension. Is there any hope of a bridge over that divide, Stephen? A rope, even? Or must we remain strangers like the Pope and Glasgow Rangers? And this one is called Edinburgh. I'm afraid I won't be going to the Edinburgh tattoo, because to me, a parade of weaponry and the capacity to hurt is about as pleasing as dog dirt on the shoe. Only poo is easier than the tattoo to get rid of. To you, it may be taboo to poo-poo the tattoo. But to me, the tattoo is something to say ta-ta to. Actually, there's this little thing that's a bit of fun, really, for the glasses wearers that I occasionally do. And it's what I call the glasses wearers salute. I'm going to give a little tap on my glasses, and then if you glasses wearers could reiterate, so to speak, that tapping process. OK, so I'm going to give you a five. Give me a five back. Right hand. That's good, that's good. I enjoyed that, actually. OK, we're going to go for a double five after me. Right, now you contact lens wearers, try it.
Put one in, you gotta poke yourself in the eye.
And then they make you cry.
Especially when they get around the back of your eyeball.
But worst of all, they're optical illusions. They're optical illusions. They tell people lies. They make it look like you see clearly when you're really
this dishonesty makes me want to shout.
Contact lenses out.
Take those.
Contact lenses out. He feels sick inside of them immensely.
Yes, I do. The price of fear and vanity is here.
Contact lenses.
Contact lenses. You pay through the nose, you get something in your eye. Contact lenses, the exception to the rule. The small is beautiful. They're blinking horrible. They're the groveler's alternative. But don't give them any space
in your face.
Contact lenses will make you lonely. They were made for your eyes and your eyes only. Get yourself the proper gear, the ones that go behind your earphones, and track those contact lenses out. Take it away!
Stop mucking about.
Take those
contact lenses out.
Those piddly
contact lenses out.
Those piddly
contact lenses out.
It's almost time for us to go. Yeah. You've had the edits, now here are the credits for who's been here inside your radio. There's been Susan Norton, Keith Moore, Nigel, Roy O'Shea, Tony Curtis, myself, John Hegley, and the production was by Phil Clark. You've been harking to us.